Show your team that they are valued. Ensure that diversity, equity, and inclusion is actively a part of the culture of your organization and your team. Be honest, transparent, and always have consistent communications.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, everybody. This is Ben Morton, and welcome to episode 60 of the podcast. In this episode, we are joined by Ivory Matthews, who is the Chief Executive Officer of Columbia Housing and Case Housing. Having dedicated more than 20 years of her professional career to the affordable housing industry. Under Ivory's leadership, Columbia Housing is putting residents first, rebuilding public trust, increasing organisational efficiency, and creating a climate of transparency and accountability. Using these principles, Columbia Housing has launched an aggressive $500 million US dollar portfolio repositioning and redevelopment strategy with an unrelenting focus on the preservation and creation of quality, affordable housing for the families that they serve. Ivory herself holds a master's degree in counselling and psychology from Troy University, a bachelor's degree in sociology from Newbury College, and several nationally recognised certifications in the affordable housing arena. She's also a Riley Institute Diversity Leadership Initiative Fellow and has recently been named a top 20 dynamic CEO for 2021 by the CEO publication. I loved my conversation with Ivory, and early on in that conversation, I just happened to stumble upon the fact that Ivory is a former college athlete, which led to a fascinating conversation about how these experiences have shaped and molded her into the leader that she is today. We also got really deep into the weeds of some of the implicit biases that she has faced during her career and what we can all be doing as leaders to remove these for those that we lead. But before we get into the conversation and the interview, folks, I've got an offer for you. I am giving away free access to my weekly planning protocol online course. In order to access it, all you need to do is simply leave a review of this podcast on Apple Podcasts and then send a screenshot of that review to chat@ben-morton.com. That's chat@ben-morton.com, and we'll then send you your access details for the course. And now, without any further delay, please enjoy my conversation with Ivory Matthews. Ivory, a very warm welcome to the podcast. It's fantastic to have you with us. Thank you for kindly giving up your time. And first of all, how are you?
I am doing absolutely great. And thank you so much for having me, Ben.
You're very welcome. I'm looking forward to a fascinating conversation, not least because in the past, I've done a lot of work in the UK with housing associations. And I know a lot of people listening are working in that sector. So that was why I was so keen to get you on the show and talk to you about what you're doing in that sector across the pond, as they say. So it's great to have you with us.
Same here.
So Ivory, the first question I've been asking all guests who come on the show in the last few weeks or so is perhaps quite a big question, but it's, what does leadership mean to you?
Leadership means to me a few different things. First, it is the ability to support, motivate, inspire individuals to get to where they desire and or need to be. It is the ability to implement various coaching styles, to put the right people in the right places and at the right time. Leadership is also having the ability to be great, to be a great listener, a great teammate, and not afraid to hire people who are smarter than you are in order to achieve a common goal.
Brilliant. I love that. I love the emphasis that you put there on coaching as well. And straight away going off track, and I'm kind of leapfrogging to a question I wanted to ask you. But I saw in the CEO publication article that I read about you, I think you described your leadership style as very much a mentoring style. So what does that look like in practice on a day-to-day basis? Kind of how do you work as a leader where you're incorporating these coaching and mentoring skills?
Certainly. I'm a former athlete, and so I always use the term coaching because it's so important and so applicable to, you know, the world of work. You know, I always tell people never, ever underestimate the value of a strong support system. Mm. And that strong support system includes coaching, being coachable, and also knowing that in each phase of your career, you're going to need a strong support system. I tell young people that I mentor to think about your career like, you know, I use the example of when we have astronauts who are launching off into space. During the first phase of the launch, they're supported by several rockets that are appended to each side. And those rockets are there for support to give the shuttle all of the speed that it needs to successfully enter into the atmosphere. Mm-hmm. But once it gets to a certain level in the atmosphere, those shuttles kind of fall off, right? And so think of those as mentors who are coaching you along the way in those various parts of your career. And so when they're off into orbit, space, doing their research, they also have another set of mentors who are probably here on planet Earth, guiding them through the coaching process of what they're looking for, the various things that they might find. And then they need assistance from another set of coaches to land successfully back to Earth. And so they depend on those coaches to guide them successfully back to Earth. And so I just tell them, and I use that analogy, which it really brings home the point of not being afraid to reach out and have someone to mentor you during every phase of your life, in every phase of your career.
I love that. It's a great, great analogy. And I've got to ask, so what was your sporting background, Ivor? You mentioned there you was an athlete. So tell us about that.
Yes, I played basketball in high school, and then I also played basketball in college. And it was such a great experience because I think that it prepared me with a tremendous amount of valuable tools to enter the world of work, to be a great team member, to be a great leader, to be a great cheerleader, and to serve all the roles that you need to serve as you go out through your professional career.
Mm. So were there any specific lessons or skills that you took from your time as an athlete in school and college that have stayed with you and you really feel have helped you be successful as a leader? Were there any specifics there?
Yeah, so, you know, I've learned a lot. And I would say probably one of the biggest skills that I've learned is that never look at defeat as being the end to the end. Always look at, take those L's not as losses, but opportunities to learn. Mm. And so that's how I take my career. So anytime we have what we call an L. We don't say losses here. In my professional world, we say, oh my God, this is an opportunity for us to learn. What can we learn from this L? And so that's one of the biggest things that I've taken away from college.
Mm. And how do you create that culture where that always happens? Because I've spoke to so many organizations, so many clients have asked me to help them really embed that sort of culture and process where they get really good at, often referred to it as the after action review, right? Where you are analyzing, deconstructing. It could be something that's not gone well, but equally, I think if we carry on learning from the world of sport, like every athlete and sports person, sports team will analyze their wins as much as their defeats. And I just see both of those don't happen that much in the business world. In the business world, we might analyze an L, as you call it, but even that doesn't seem to happen that much because we can just get so caught up with the next task, what have we got to do next? So how have you gone about really embedding that as a as part of the culture and a practice?
Yeah. So there are two things. One of the things that I do is I always communicate, whether it's verbally or in writing, I always communicate with the people that I work with as my team. You know, I always refer that to them. To me, if you continue to use that in your communications, then you start to embody that type of behavior and that type of understanding and culture within your organization. The other thing that I do is I try to have a pretty good understanding of the needs of each of my players, right? Each of the people on my team. And so there are folk on my team who perform well and understand when there is an environment under which they learn in a kinesthetic way, right? So they learn by doing. There are people who are visual learners. There are people who are auditory learners. And so I bring in professionals in the organization that can help me understand the best coaching mechanisms that I can incorporate with my team. And so then I have a better understanding of when I am working with my team member A, I know that he or she responds best in this situation and versus when I'm working with team member B. And the same for me, right? They know that I'm more kinesthetic. And I'm learning to be more auditory and visual and things like that. But they know that that's my best way of being communicated towards as well. So we have a good mutual understanding of where each of us stand when we're working towards common goals.
Yeah, that's brilliant. And have you ever coached sports teams or basketball team yourself? Or were you always on the playing side?
Well, you know, I did right out of college. I had an opportunity to coach a middle school team of very energetic young women, and it was a great experience, you know, and this was over, you know, 25 years ago. I'd heard from one of my middle school students that I coached, you know, years ago. She reached out to me. She's in the professional world now, and she told me what an impact I had made at that time. Now, I was like, you know, 22 years old. I didn't think I was making an impact. certainly had a lot to learn and certainly still learning. But yeah, so that was my first time coaching. And I haven't coached in an official way since then. I do have two children that play sports. So I'm the mom who's coaching on the bench right now.
So the reason I asked, when you was describing sort of how you really strive to understand the players on your team kind of in work, it just very much sounded like how a sports coach kind of operates, really how to get the best out of people, knowing the subtleties and nuances of their character. So I just wondered how much of that sort of sporting background was consciously feeding through to how you operate as a leader now.
Yeah, these were things that you know, I was fortunate enough to attend a small liberal arts college in South Carolina. And my coach, she actually taught me those things. I would have never recognized that there were different learning styles. I didn't learn this until I, you know, was in college playing sports myself. And it actually happened when my teammates and I were wondering why our coach was coaching us different. Because we had come from a background in high school where everybody received the same coaching techniques. You either got it or you didn't. And so when we got to college, we learned that our coach was coaching us different. And we were like, wait a minute, you can't coach us different, you know? Mm-hmm. And she explained to us why. And it has really had an impact on my role as a leader and just on my role when I'm in situations when I'm just on the team. And so I truly appreciate that valuable lesson that I've learned.
Yeah, it reminds me a little bit around, you often see it as a cartoon post on LinkedIn or somewhere talking about the difference between equality and fairness. And the cartoon is often a picture of children of different heights trying to peer over a fence and look at something on the other side of the fence. And it sort of says, equality where every child is given two boxes to stand on. And because of their different heights, some still can't see over the fence and some can really clearly see. And then it shows you again, the next picture is fairness, where the boxes are spread. So one kid might have three, the shortest kid, so he can see over. The tallest kid has one, so he can see over. Kind of what you just described there around different people being coached slightly differently really kind of resonates with that kind of fairness. What's going to get the best out of each person, enable each person to perform at their best, is what you need, rather than necessarily all being equal and the same, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. I'm also familiar with that cartoon, and I love it. It gives a great pictorial of exactly that same scenario.
And we're leaping all around the pre-planned questions here, but that's probably quite a nice lead into something else I wanted to ask you, Ivory, which was in the CEO publication article again that I read. I think in there you mentioned that implicit bias had been one of the most significant challenges you faced in your career. Can you tell us more about that, please, and sort of how you worked and kind of what you had to do to overcome it?
Certainly. For the listeners out there, implicit bias is when we have attitudes towards people or associate stereotypes with them without our conscious knowledge, which is unconscious sometimes, that we have these biases. I've encountered, gender-related roadblocks during every phase of my professional career. For example, one example I'll give you is that my name is Ivory. And Ivory is a unisex name. It's given to both girls, and boys. So I recall a time, and it was early in my career, when I had an interview, and I remember hearing one of the interviewers say, "Oh my goodness, when I was reviewing the resume, I thought we were interviewing a man."
Wow.
I just didn't think a young woman could have accomplished all of this that she has. And at that time, the word implicit bias was something that I wasn't familiar with. And so when I think about it now, I think about that was a bias that the interviewers were looking for and thought it was a man based on the accomplishments, on the resume. And then, I'll just give you another example. There's also the motherhood penalty. So my husband and I, we got married later in life. I say later in life, 28 years old, and we had our first child at 31. And so there is an assumption that when women are, when they have children later in life, that they're less committed and, less available to careers because they have to spend more time with their children, which is far from the truth. And so there have been times when I've walked into interviews, people thought that I may not have been as committed for that type of responsibility because I had a small child. And so how I've overcome the implicit bias, honestly, through just pure education. I've actively participated in some of the best DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion professional development opportunities offered in the state of South Carolina. I am a 2018 graduate of Furman University's Riley Institute, also known as the Riley Diversity Institute. It was founded in 1999 by Furman University, which is a college in Greenville, South Carolina. They provide such a plethora of diverse information about understanding not only implicit bias, but all the things that are in the arena of diversity, equity, and inclusion. And I've learned to take things in small steps to address implicit bias with someone who doesn't understand that they are harboring these biases, to take a lot of, it takes a lot of mental, intellectual maturity to have those open, conversations, no judgment zone conversations with someone who may not realize that they have an implicit bias. And so through my professional training, I've learned to really take a step back and adjust my thinking when I feel like, uh-oh, you're about to think implicitly biased against a situation. And I've learned to have those one-off, one-on-one conversations with people when I have encountered those biases now that I have a better understanding of when they might be rearing their heads. You know, it is something that I think that is ongoing for people to be able to feel okay about being in those spaces to talk about it, and also owning that you have that bias and doing the work to not let that affect the way that you think about people in situations.
So that's fascinating, Ivory. Like, the question that springs to mind that I'd love to ask is, and I'll explain the background to this question, is to what degree do you think that implicit bias in some people really is unconscious? And what sits behind the question is, a few episodes back on the podcast, I had a lady called Jan Gooding, who was the former chair of the UK charity Stonewall, which champions diversity, inclusion, LGBT kind of rights, et cetera, et cetera. And we was talking about the same thing. And she said, but the thing is, Ben, a lot of unconscious bias actually isn't conscious. A lot of it is conscious. We just don't like to admit it. I wonder if you've got a, I can see you nodding. I just wonder what your view and indeed experience of that is.
I agree. I totally 100% agree that it is conscious, right? Mm. But it's conscious because it was learned somewhere and it was taught somewhere, right? We just don't, like, you know, are born in this world and then all of a sudden think these things about situations. And so in order for me to have an authentic conversation, right, I have chosen to say to myself that it is unconscious bias, mm. because then my level of judgment goes all the way down and I'm communicating with that person who might be consciously biased, right? Yeah. I'm communicating with them from an authentic, coachable moment. Mm. So I'm taking it to listen and understand where they're coming from, and then for me to communicate back to them and hopefully in an educational way so that they can understand why this is coming across as an implicit bias.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. And I've got to take you back to the first example you gave around that interview. So when you heard that gentleman saying, oh, my God, I thought we was interviewing a man from the CV. So was that literally in the interview that you heard him whispering that to a colleague?
This was literally in the interview that I heard.
So how did you respond in the moment to that?
You know, in the moment, I responded that I oftentimes receive that response, not verbally, but in writing, because I receive a lot of mail, you know, emails with Mr. People who have never met me or have seen a picture, they automatically assume that it's a Mr. So I receive a lot of Mr.'s, and that was my response.
So do you, on LinkedIn and places like that, do you put your pronouns on your profile?
You know, I just did that. I would probably say no more than, what, 4 months, 4 or 5 months ago, I just changed. I was kind of hesitant at first because, you know, I thought to myself, why should it matter, right? And then I said, well, no, it's an educational perspective. People should really they should ask a question before assuming.
Yeah.
So I decided to go ahead and put the pronouns.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
And if carrying on this topic of conversation, again, in your view, what do you think senior leaders, so MDs, CEOs, etc., of today and tomorrow can be doing as leaders within their organizations to help level the playing field for everybody and start removing some of these unconscious biases so that everyone kind of has the opportunity to get on and flourish and the same opportunities are open to us? Or what can leaders be doing, do you think?
Certainly. You know, I think it's so important for leaders to begin to incorporate diversity, equity, and inclusion in their places of business. And it shouldn't be incorporated as a one-off, you know, workshop or professional development opportunity. It should be something that is ongoing. There's so much to learn in this space. And every time that I have the opportunity to talk to a DEI professional or be in a space where I'm learning more about diversity, equity, and inclusion, I walk away just blown away with what I thought I knew and realize that there's so much more to explore in this space. And, you know, our world, we are faced with so much around misunderstandings that put us in such places of hurt and pain and shame. And sometimes people, you see a lot of folk even losing their careers because they may have said something or done something that was egregious in the DEI world. And so I think that we have to make a conscious decision. Those of us who are leaders, we have to make a conscious decision to start talking about DEI, starting from the recruitment process, you know, to the onboarding process, to the continued education process, and all the way to the exiting process. You know, it's also important too to know, you know, how your employees who are leaving your organization, how are they viewing diversity, equity, and inclusion in the workspace? And once you receive that data, do something about it. You know, don't just have it as a statistic and be okay that you've accomplished 80% or 70%.
I think you're so right that education is key, right? Especially for us as leaders ourselves. If I sort of reflect personally, I was a child of the 80s, growing up working class family in the 80s in the UK, then into the army in the 2000s, which has got all sorts of biases and stereotypes and its own unique culture, some of which wasn't very healthy. So as a result of that, there'll be some unconscious biases that I'm probably genuinely not aware of. There's other biases that I'm becoming more and more aware of and trying to manage. But what I've certainly realized is the more I read and learn about this topic, the more I realize I don't know.
Absolutely.
And I think that's the key thing, right, for leaders. Just the more we study, the more we realize we don't know and how much more there is that we could be doing that we're not even considering or thinking about. And I think that's the, personally, I think that's one of the big challenges for leaders right now. A little knowledge is a dangerous thing, right?
Absolutely.
And Ivory, kind of coming back to some of the first questions we were going to talk about and just thinking about your leadership career more broadly and generally, what would you say are perhaps two, maybe three of the key leadership lessons that you've picked up throughout your whole career so far that you would maybe pass on to somebody else aspiring to be an MD or CEO in the future?
Absolutely. You know, work-life balance is so important. This is, of course, something that I am still struggling with and working on. But it's so important to have that time off to retool. You know, it's worth its weight in gold. And you have to pencil in that work-life balance, on your calendar. And I would also say to be prepared to adapt to changes. And change is inevitable. And when it occurs, those sometimes can be your greatest professional growth opportunities. And so always look at change as an opportunity to grow. And so those are two things that I think I would leave as lessons that I've learned throughout my career.
Yeah, I love that, especially the piece around change. It reminds me, a number of years ago, we did a renovation project on our home. And the landlord of the house next door didn't want us to make the changes and kept forcing us to change the plans. I remember chatting to our architect and he said, stick with it, Ben, because so often the best designs come out of restrictions. And the renovation we ended up doing to our house, we prefer, is way better than the original plan we had. And I think COVID for some businesses has been the same. It's certainly been true for me. The restrictions that placed upon my business has led to probably the greatest phase of growth and the greatest phase of enjoyment in what I do. So I'm so pleased you said that, because I think it is just so true.
Oh, absolutely. You know, one of the things, you know, I tell people all the time, I joined my current agency in July of 2019. And so shortly thereafter, we experienced COVID-19, right? And so it basically changed the way that we did business. And so, but we had at that time very antiquated technology systems. Had it not been for COVID-19, we would not have been able to maximize our ability to get in new technology to be able to advance our organization. And so we did that in a very short time frame and have been more productive than we ever could have been, because it would have taken us a long time to figure out how to, you know, get in all of the tools that we needed to make sure to bring everybody up to speed. So
Ivory, I always like to finish up with a few quick fire questions to end every episode of the show. The first of those is, what would you say are three key traits for leaders in the current world that we find ourselves in?
Be laser focused, also nimble, and willing to take calculated risks.
Love it. And what would you say is the one book that you've read that's really had the greatest impact upon you?
The Color of Law, A Forgotten History of How Our Government Segregated America by Richard Wallstein.
Wow. Great. Thank you. Ivory, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today. I've absolutely loved chatting with you. And I just know that everybody listening is going to get so much value from what you shared. So on behalf of me and the listeners, thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
I hope you found that conversation valuable, folks, but most importantly, I really hope that you're able to go away and make some small positive changes as a result. If you did get value from this episode, then please do rate, review, and subscribe via iTunes, as it really does enable us to keep bringing you more and more interviews with fantastic leaders and subject matter experts. Do also visit ben-morton.com, where you can connect with me, find out more about my leadership mentoring and team development work, along with details of all of my online programs via the tools and resources page. That's it for this episode. See you again in the next one very soon, and lead on.